If you like movies and you like cocktails, our next guest wrote a book for you. I mean, you've heard of wine and food pairings. Tim Federle figured out some drink and movie pairings in his book, Gone with the Gin, Cocktails with a Hollywood Twist. Tim Federle is a writer who has a way with cocktails and cocktail book titles. Two others in this genre are called Hickory Dackery Dock and Tequila Mockingbird. Tim also locks the liquor cabinet and writes books for kids and young adults, including Better Nate Than Ever. He's also the co-playwright for the upcoming Broadway adaptation of the popular novel Tuck Everlasting, coming to Broadway in the spring. Tim Federle, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Great to be here, Jeffrey.
You might be a good bartender, but you're certainly a master punster. Indiana Jones and the Shirley Temple of Doom, the French concoction, the maraschino candidate. I mean, how long did it take to come up with the stuff for this book?
Well, it was like the greatest job ever. I basically started with a big spreadsheet, and I Googled like best movies ever, and AFI has this list of 100 movies that, you know, most people would consider classics. And so I started with that list, and then I, you know, also had a huge list of cocktails that are really recognizable, like Manhattans or, Stoli, just various brands. And eventually I mashed them all up and kind of came up with these 50 cocktails. But, you know, it's a tough job. Somebody has to do it.
Truly. So, wait, did you sample all these? Did you bring friends over? Did this take 3 years instead of 3 weeks? Or, you know, how did this all work out?
It was right in the middle. It was about 3 months. I worked with a really fantastic mixologist in New York named Cody Goldstein. And I basically conceived the cocktails and then turned to the expert to say, okay, how do I take something like, you know, you said Indiana Jones and the Shirley Temple of Doom, which is one of my favorites. And I said, you know, how do we make a Shirley Temple that evokes the spirit of Indiana Jones? So among other things, the garnish on that one is a gummy snake, because as everybody knows, Indiana Jones is afraid of snakes.
I hate snakes. Right. What does a mixologist do? I've always wondered about that term.
Yeah, mixologist is like a fancy word for bartender. It's like when you go to a restaurant and it says something is house made. I think that just means it's homemade plus $3. A mixologist is, I think we've entered into this culture where there's a greater curiosity for a slower movement towards more handcrafted things. And I think it's the irony in the world of everything being so interconnected and so fast and so digital that a mixologist is really, making something before your very eyes in a way that's sort of time-tested and crafted. And then, you know, what I try to bring to it is, how do you bring a mixologist to a movie night, for example, which is where, you know, hopefully this book comes in.
So I need to understand, are these new drinks? Are these old drinks renamed? For example, is Tequila Sunrise Boulevard that different from Tequila Sunrise?
All of the drinks are sort of gentle twists on classics, with a few of them being, you know, a sort of larger departure with something like, for instance, the title recipe with Gone with the Gin. I looked at it and I said, how do I evoke the spirit of this kind of classic film that's so long, actually? And so there's a jalapeno element to evoke the sort of hot as a burning Atlanta a portion of the movie. And then, of course, there's peaches in this drink that you muddle with the gin to evoke the Georgian element. So a drink like that is really, you know, built from the ground up. Whereas another one, like the Muppets Make Manhattans, which is, of course, a play on the Muppets Take Manhattan, that's just a basic Manhattan. And then we suggest that you serve it with a side of bacon, with apologies to Miss Piggy.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely have to apologize for Miss Piggy for that one. Were there things that ended up on the cutting room floor? Were there things you edited out because you tried the drinks and went, ew, that just, nah, not that one?
Yeah, there were certain things. You know, when we first were conceiving of, like, the Empire likes Jack, so I knew I wanted it to be like a Jack Daniels recipe for Star Wars. I remember we went through a lot of iterations, and sometimes you just end up overthinking it. The easier ones, like my favorite recipe is probably White Russian Christmas, which is in the movie musical section. And that one is, you take a White Russian, but you make it with an eggnog component, and then there's crushed candy cane on top, and some of them just pop to you. And I think, you know, one of my larger lessons as a writer in the last 5 years has just been, sometimes your first idea is actually the best one, and it's just the clearest concept that the audience is going to get right away.
You know, a lot of these look fairly straight up when you look at the White Russian Christmas you just mentioned, a little schnapps of horrors, you know, so you can tell what's in there, Yankee Doodle brandy. But the Wizard of Shiraz, so we're talking a wine cocktail here?
Yeah, it's a wine cocktail that's actually, I believe we put it in a sort of slow cooker. And so the idea of there's no place like home, nothing smells like home, like, you know, a little bit of a cinnamon on the stovetop. And so the Wizard of Shiraz is a hot wine cocktail that sort of mulled and hopefully has the reader thinking there's no place like home.
There aren't just cocktails in the book, we should point out. There's some drinking games in here, too.
Yeah, there's a few drinking games, which I'm trying to think which ones are appropriate to say on the air. I mean, you know, so many drinking games in real life, which, of course, I advocate to please read responsibly. But, you know, some of these, it's like, you know, take a shot every time somebody slow claps during any movie from the 80s.
That could be dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know. It's like make sure to alternate with water. Take a shot anytime somebody says Beetlejuice in Beetlejuice. And you know, the whole idea of this also, you know, the first book that sort of launched this little mini series was To Kill a Mockingbird, which was really inspired by the fact that my mom has this book club in California, by the way, and she shared with me offhandedly that these ladies would get together, and about 10 minutes in, somebody would always say, you know, do we have any white wine we could open? And so I sort of thought, you know, there's an idea there. There's a concept there. Taking these two disparate elements, books and cocktails, and making something out of it. And that's what I like to do, is to make fun.
All right, movies and cocktails. And that's what we got here. And Gone with the Gin, Cocktails with a Hollywood Twist. We'll talk more with author Tim Federle when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We have two segments to come here in the Jefferson Exchange. We're going to continue talking with Tim Federle about Gone with the Gin, Cocktails with a Hollywood Twist. Next segment, we'll be talking to Jennifer Wright about her book, It Ended Badly. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Tim about the cocktails he's created to go along with movies. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Tim, you described different mixing techniques in the book. Is it possible to mess up a drink?
Yeah, it's possible to mess up a drink. But I think sometimes people overthink the element of, you know, they hear mixology or they, you know, they're having a party and they're not quite sure a way in. You know, a couple techniques I learned along the way, one of them just is any drink that's finished with like a splash of something carbonated, even something really basic, you know, you pour a little bit of gin in a glass and you add ginger ale, let's say, for a really basic drink. If you're putting in a carbonated element, you don't have to stir. The bubbles do it for you. When it comes to actually shaking a cocktail, I recommend a certain type of shaker that everybody should have at home, which the Hawthorne shaker does not have three pieces. It's just two pieces, and the strainer is built right in. And the other thing most people don't do quite correctly is you can really wake up the cocktail in the shaker. Just shake it harder than you actually think. Just make sure that the cap is on really, really tight.
Because then you're waking up yourself and not the cocktail.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so what does that mean to wake up the cocktail, though?
Well, I think it's a sort of gentle way of saying you don't need to be ginger. You know, you want to actually approach this with a sense of command. And as we're approaching the holidays, I do get asked the question a lot, you know, I'd love to have people over for some sort of party, but I get really intimidated. They see my little mini bar and they say, what can you make me? And so what I say to anybody who feels a little intimidated out there is, first of all, hide your booze. Because the minute people see all these different bottles, they're saying, like, what fancy thing can you make me? The second thing I say is, look, if you're going to have some people over, make a punch. Make a house cocktail. Turn your weakness into a strength. And just make a big bowl of something basic. And again, you know, you turn to something easy, like you mentioned the Shiraz cocktail before. You put it in the slow cooker, and you've got something really festive and warm and it typically dazzles people who are coming looking for some sort of drink.
So a couple of examples here, moonshining, grapefruit juice, rum, and moonshine. Where do you get moonshine these days?
Well, moonshine in this case is actually a brand that you can look up, and they make something that tastes just a little bit backwater on its own, but pairs nicely with other drinks. Most of the cocktails I tried to build with either incredibly generic ingredients or just things that could be found in any corner store, but that one was fairly specific.
We talked to the folks last year who wrote a book called 12 Bottle Bar, and I wonder what kinds of basic ingredients you recommend having around the house for people who want to do what you're talking about doing here.
Well, of course, there's the real basics. You know, it's like anybody who wants to call themselves a home mixologist needs gin and rum and tequila and vodka and some whiskey. But I also say, you know, most people, if you ask even a sort of inveterate drinker, you know, what's your favorite type of cocktail? Most people start with a horror story. Like, what's your favorite drink? And they'll go, well, I can't drink whiskey because I'm not functional the next day. So I say, you know, simplify. Pick one or two bottles of some great spirits and then start experimenting. And there's also no harm. You know, everybody sees me out and they go, oh, gosh, you know, you wrote that cocktail book. Well, I'm just as likely to be found with a beer in my hand than a fancy mixed drink.
Do you get invited to a lot of parties now because people think you're gonna bring a little kit and whip up something interesting out of one of your books?
Yes, and I also, that's exactly what happens. You know, I walk in and somebody goes, you should make this thing from your book. And some of them have taken off more than others. Like there's this one cocktail from the first book called Are You There, God? It's Me, Margarita, which of course is a twist on this Judy Blume classic. And it sort of just was buried in the middle of the book as this throwaway title. And then last year it was a clue on Jeopardy. And Judy Blume tweeted at me her approval, which was, you know, to me, my sign that I really made it, that Judy Blume thought my cocktail was a good idea. So that's probably the number one cocktail that I get asked to make. But they're all fun to make.
Tim Federle is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's written three books on cocktails. The latest is Cocktails with a Hollywood Twist. The book is titled Gone with the Gin. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Got ideas for cocktails to complement movies? You might not be able to outdo the punning cunning of Tim Federle, but join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You sound like you're fairly omnivorous as far as what you'll consume, you know, just as like you'd have a beer in your hand, you said. Is there a favorite drink, and is it a drink that corresponds to a favorite movie?
That's a great question. There's a drink that I really loved coming up with called Lushmore, which is a twist on the Wes Anderson new classic Rushmore from 1998. This was, of course, the movie that sort of relaunched Bill Murray's comeback career. And for those who might not be as familiar with the film, it was, you know, here's this guy who's been getting critical cheers since he first debuted with Bottle Rocket. But it wasn't until Rushmore that Anderson really gained the attention of the relative masses, at least in sort of indie film terms. So it's got this Harold and Maude theme of this overscheduled prep school kid. And what I did with that was, knowing that it was a movie that I love about this kind of school environment, I took 4 ounces of chocolate milk, there's an ounce of bourbon, and then there's a liqueur element, and there's some simple syrup and 3 mini marshmallows for garnish. And that's probably my favorite, just because I think it's a real wink to the tone of the film, which I am crazy about.
You have a bit of a sweet tooth, I'm detecting.
Is it coming through on the airwaves? Yes. I'm always I always eat dessert first, because you really never know what's going to happen to you, Jeffrey.
Well, once we got to a drink with the chocolate and the marshmallows in it, it was, you know, kind of the bigger tip off there. Do the drinks taste better when you're watching the movie that corresponds to them? For example, if you had your heart set on drinking a sloppy in Seattle, but instead your wife rented on the waterfront, what do you do?
Well, first you make sex on the waterfront, which is also a cocktail in the book. But I think the short answer and the real answer to that is, you know, we live in this kind of mashup culture now, where you go on YouTube and you see, there was a really cool piece yesterday where this song Uptown Funk was overlaid. Somebody took Fred Astaire's old music videos and they played. And I look at that kind of thing and I think, this is what's so cool about this sort of movement of people mashing up cultural elements. And so for some of these movies that I went back to watch, I went, wow, you know, Ben-Hur at the time won the most Oscars of all time, but it's really long, and it, you can admire it, and you can sort of see what went into it, and there's a lot of cool lore about Ben-Hur with various uncredited screenwriters, but the truth is, to a modern sensibility, it's a tough film to get through in one sitting, and that's why, you know, a cocktail element, in this case the Ben-Hur at Cane, is just a way to make some of these movies go down a little more easily.
Is it similar to the Hurricane that you can buy on the streets of New Orleans?
It is. It's roughly similar with a few other sort of biblical elements. But yes, I will cop to the fact that this is a gentle twist on a hurricane you can get in New Orleans. This one, of course, is preferably made with holy water, but that's a whole other show.
All right. I was going to ask you about the biblical elements. I guess holy water is the one, huh?
Yeah, I know. I feel like I need to furiously flip through. It's so funny. When you make 50 cocktails, it's like saying which one's your favorite kid.
Right.
You just can't pick one. So yeah, it's sometimes hard for me to grab exactly what my favorite. I think with this one, what did we do on this? I think it was just, it was The Passion of the Fruit. That's how we picked it. Passion of the Fruit is the biblical. Ding, 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 ding. So there's a passion fruit element. Again, you know, anyone out there who's either a pun fan or groans at puns or something in between knows that some of these are a little bit more of a stretch than others.
Tim Federle is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His latest book on cocktails is a movie-themed one called Gone with the Gin, Cocktails with a Hollywood Twist. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned Ben-Hur, for example, being a long movie. I wonder if you've deliberately designed some of the companion cocktails to be not too strong so you don't end up sleeping through the last hour of a long movie, for example.
That's exactly what we did, actually. And for the title cocktail, which also is a long film, you know, I offer the advice, please sip slowly because you've got like 4 hours to get through. It was interesting to go back and watch, you know, so many of these films that are considered modern classics but have elements that kind of make you wince, either because they don't play to a modern audience's sensibilities with some of our cultural norms now. But that's the fun thing. And then there's, you know, other little classics, like I have a whole comedy section, which is basically half of it is Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan films. And it's cool to kind of go look at those movies from the 90s that are kind of holding up and still really charming and really have something to say about modern relationships. And those were fun, you know, like Sloppy in Seattle was one that's got this espresso element for the Seattle coffee culture. And those are really fun drinks to create, in part because the movies themselves are so inspiring to me as an artist.
I'll give a hint to the listeners as well that you can get a good few laughs just out of reading the table of contents, let alone the contents of the book itself, because, for example, Rear Wino instead of Rear Window.
Yeah, the Rear Wino, that was a fun cocktail to make. That was such a fun movie to rewatch. It's so stylish, and Edith Head did the costumes, and man, Hitchcock was in top form. And so for that movie, which most of your listeners will remember, is of course about this incredibly handsome guy who's holed up in his apartment all sweltering summer in the days before AC. And so Rear Wino for the book, it involves a boxed wine that's chilled. And it's sort of a fun nod to, you know, the days before air conditioning, the way we cooled off is through tall drinks.
Were there any pairings, Tim, that troubled you just a little bit? I mean, Mary Poppins being so light and sweet and everything, having a bloody Mary Poppins didn't quite seem like perhaps the ideal match.
Yeah, I always appreciate a review, Jeffrey, so thanks for that. What I did with Bloody Mary Poppins was I did English gin, of course, London gin, so for that element. But actually, I will push back a little bit. I take the note. But what I'll say about that is, you know, when you rewatch Mary Poppins, a couple fascinating things. First of all, famous Julie Andrews story. She debuts on Broadway in My Fair Lady. And then they make a My Fair Lady film. And even though Julie Andrews is an overnight star in New York, they opt to hire Audrey Hepburn. Well, famously, in the same year, Julie Andrews gets hired by Walt Disney to star as Mary Poppins, and she goes up on the Oscar stage and wins the Oscar the very year she was passed over for the role she created on Broadway. Of course, all of these things I include as tidbits in the book. But when you rewatch Mary Poppins, you go, gosh, she's actually, like, really tough. Like, that is tough love before Dr. Phil was on the air.
Uh-huh.
And so it was fun to create a cocktail that you go, you know, I think Bloody Mary actually kind of works. It's like a really spicy, tart cocktail that goes down, you know, rather than a spoonful of sugar, it goes down with, you know, a, like a bucketful of sass.
It's the medicine, not the spoonful of sugar.
That's exactly it.
So you mentioned yourself and the mixologist. Was there any kind of committee that you had to sample some of these drinks? And if so, were there times when the other people drinking said, oh, this is really good, and you were like, eh, I don't know.
Yeah, thumbs down from the masses. Yeah, especially for the first book. I got to say, when I first wrote the Companion, that was like writing it from the ground up. Because what's interesting about writing nonfiction is you sell the concept first, and then you scramble like heck to actually write it. And so I had a committee for all the Tequila Mockingbird drinks. Gamma the Gin I created really with this guy one-on-one because he's such a pro that I trusted him so much. And when we would, I would say, it needs to taste like this, or it's got to have this element, or like you said, little schnapps of ours. Mm-hmm. It's this, you know, movie about this killer plant. And so schnapps, what if we did all plant-based liquors? And so, you know, I think he really knocked it out of the park, and we did not do a wide taste. We did not do a wide taste test. Though I am now hearing from readers. The book just came out, and it's fun to hear how they're doing a twist on these cocktails as well.
Are they coming back with new recipes? I mean, this seems like an endless sort of thing. I mean, as many movies as there are, you could certainly have, you know, a cocktail for each.
Yeah, I mean, this seems to be, and I'm sure you recognize the same as a journalist. As soon as you publish something, that's when everyone comes out of the woodwork with all the good ideas you wish you had thought of. So I could do an entire second volume of Tequila Mockingbird at this point. Though, you know, luckily the first one seems to be keeping people busy.
This book is called Gone with the Gin, Cocktails with a Hollywood Twist. Tim Federle wrote it, and he's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Citizen Grain, this, boy, I have to wonder if you used a spit bucket to get this one ready, because you could really get tanked on this one, it seems like.
Yeah, what I wanted to make sure I did with Citizen Grain was use an incredibly small portion of, I think it's Everclear I have in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
half an ounce.
Yeah, it's Everclear, it's like half an ounce, because grain alcohol is no laughing matter. The bigger element of this, because of course, the very famous spoiler alert for this film that was shot in 1941, the rosebud element of the film that's uttered by the mystery tycoon. So there's a fizzy rosebud cocktail in this one that's got, you know, some rose water and different elements that give it that scent. I was so fascinated, by the way, when I was researching this movie for the book. You know, Orson Welles, famous for War of the Worlds, was only 25 years old when he directed Citizen Kane, which by many counts is considered the greatest film of all time. So that fact alone basically leading me to drink.
That's a pretty crazy age to be that good at something. The pictures in the book are fairly spectacular. Tell us about the illustrator. She illustrated the previous books too, right?
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. There's a great illustrator named Lauren Mortimer who lives in London. So the funny thing about books, I've never met Lauren, and yet we've got these two books out. And she is an illustrator who does everything by hand. They're very pencil drawn. They've got kind of a sepia tone. The whole concept behind these books was always, what would it feel like if you went into your grandparents' attic and you found an old sort of gentleman's handbook? And so we tried to give it that vibe that has that almost Instagram filter on all the pictures. And she really knocked it out of the ballpark and takes these really fun mashup concepts and gives them such a great visual twist.
Particularly, there's a picture for when you get into the edibles section, and it's the picture for the Silence of the Lambburgers, and there's the Lambburger where the mask is for our cannibal.
Yeah, you know, some of these, they go down more easily with cocktails, but this is the amazing thing about working with artists and working with people who are so visual, which is I would just never have thought of some of the things that my illustrator brought to this book, but that's what's so fun about collaborating. You know, it's the other cool thing about I come from the theater background, and it's so fun to be able to get other people's take on stuff.
You know, before we go, I just want to ask a question unrelated to the book. I was looking at other things you've been doing, and you spoke at a college graduation this year, and you told the graduates confidence is overrated. What do you mean by that?
Oh, confidence is just something that people really get stuck on, especially young people. You walk around the hallways of any middle school in America, you'll see a big poster with an eagle on it that says, reach for confidence. And the truth is, you only get confident when you do something that scares the heck out of you. What's underrated is courage. And the bigger value that we need to be telling people, anyone who has a dream, is to, if your legs are shaking, if you're a little bit nervous, if you think you might get made fun of for putting an idea out into the world, that's typically the sign that you should try it, because you only get confidence when you've earned it.
Wow, what a great place to end. The book is called, the latest book is called Gone with the Gin, Cocktails with a Hollywood Twist, from the always busy Tim Federle. Tim, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Total pleasure. Thanks, Jeffrey.
All right, take care.